Getting back to the village itself then, Jim, we're sitting in this story house here. Not a lot of houses around here, but you're saying that at one stage this is a substantial village. I mean, how many people in total would have lived?
Well, when I was going to school, there was 83 people. And like that, there was a lot of houses. Now, you had a tailor, Bessie Breen. You had lamb wagons, then they were known as the tailor wagons. Well, then you had shoemakers then as well. My great-grandfather, I think, was a shoemaker. He used to make clogs.
Wooden clogs?
Wooden clogs.
So people wore wooden clogs?
Wore wooden clogs.
Did you ever wear them?
I did. And they were all right, they're nice and warm and light.
And, I mean, this was as a child you would have worn them?
Yeah, as a child. Well, you wouldn't. You could be 7 or 8 years old.
Oh, yeah. But would you wear them over bare feet? Or would you have socks on? Or
Bare feet. The weather would be good that time. You didn't mind about socks that much.
So would the clogs be mostly for winter or summer?
Mostly for the winter. Because they were warm. Clogs were fairly warm, so they were. The soles, I think, was made out of elder. And that's why they were light.
And of course, and they stay on your feet, no problem.
You get used to them.
And you're saying that for winter, is this because in summer would children sometimes go barefoot?
Oh, they'd be going barefoot in the summertime. Well, they wouldn't have much of a thing on them anyway. It'd be light slippers, like canvas shoes, long ago.
Yeah.
They say, and they'd be only getting them if they were only costing, I think, maybe a shilling or two.
And
you didn't have long trousers, either. You had short trousers.
Just to make sure you didn't cut the knees out of your trousers.
Cut the knees out, anyway, you know. And probably the backside and then was all patched.
And would there be a big demand for clogs?
Well,
everybody wore them, didn't they?
Nearly everybody was wearing clogs. Well, the clogs were going out at that time.
Yeah.
So they would have been.
And what shape would they be? I mean, not pointed at the toe or anything like that.
No, they're round-toed.
Round-toed,
you see. And they had they had a mould first, you see, for the making.
But would they be carved out of a solid piece of wood?
They'd be carved out of a solid piece of wood. And be rounded, and be a heel cap on them then as well, and be a steel put right around the whole sole of them. So they would.
To keep it attached to it?
Yeah, to keep it attached to it.
And you get a good bit of wear out of those?
Yeah, a good bit of wear out of them. Depends on the treatment they get after that, you know.
I suppose they kept your feet fairly safe too, if anything
dropped
on them.
And they would, if anything dropped on them, but then if it dropped on them, it was hard luck, you weren't going to, but you had to go ahead and do it. Now, if you got a cut or anything, that time put a bit of salt on it, rub a bit of salt into it. Or either that, they got lamp oil. Put a drop of lamp oil on it, be cured. Kill any infection.
Lamp oil.
Gosh. Paraffin.
And I've heard of rubbing salt into the wound, but it really did happen.
Oh, it did happen. For the salt, you didn't get an infection in it.
But you got a nice sting.
Oh, a good sting. You had to put up with it. You know, that or iodine.
And you talked about the fact there were 83 people in the village then.
Yeah.
How do you know that for certain? I mean, is that just your memory?
Well, I had that memory. Well, you see, you had... there was Larry's lived over the road. I'm not to forget how many of them were in it. Now they had Clemens's, and you had Mann's over the road. Now you had Bessie Breen, and you had Dempsey's, and you had Muigan's again. Now you had Stamps, and you had our house. There were 17 of us, and there were 15 in family, and my father and mother. And up along the road, then you had Rebnan's, and you had Quirk's and Condley's.
All living in this area.
All them living in one area, you see. And they're all there and they're going to school, you know every one of them. And there's only one of the Condleys that lives still, and he's 86 or something like that, living in town, Larry Condley.
My goodness.
You know.
You were talking about the various activities then. There was Taylor, obviously, the shoemaker.
And the whole. Nearly anything that they wanted was nearly down here. I think they used to do the bakery in our house, in the shop. That was the bakery.
I suppose it wasn't unusual then for anyone involved with the post would have a shop as well, because people would be going in and out too for...
Going in and out, you see. They'd be always going in and out to get stuff, you know. Yeah, likely they didn't keep a big lot of stuff in. And then everybody made their own thing. Like that time, they were always at the women to be making jams and making stuff like that, you know.
Did you ever have to work behind the shop counter?
Oh, no, well, there was no shop in when I was there.
Ah, nice.
There was no shop, the shop was gone out, but I remember the shop in it. I still remember the old counter in it, and there was the door coming out to the road, and the window and all, you know. But I remember we used to have a little scales like that, same as there, butter scales. They used to weigh the stuff on that, you know.
And I suppose there was always something going on then in the village itself, and things happening.
There'd be always things happening, movement of something or another, you know. There was always a bit of a term going on, and maybe in the evening the journey meet then for a chat around or a thing like that. And sometimes that's, you weren't supposed to hear what was going on. You were told to go off with yourself. You weren't supposed to listen to anybody, you know, gossiping.
And what would it be like when someone in the village died?
Well, if anyone died in the village, everybody would be around and they'd stay up all night. So they would. They'd be staying up maybe for two or three nights, you know, for the wake. You see, there'd be always be a term at that. So they would. And for one lad anyway, that there was a wake. I don't know who was waiting now anyway. And they put a cord around his neck anyway. And then this lad come in and give him a pull. And his head popped up.
There was always a bit of that going on, wasn't there?
There was always a bit of that going on, you know.
But it was still a big thing for a village when someone died.
It was a bit of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no malice in it.
Yeah, or disrespect.
No, or disrespect or thing like that in it, no.
But the whole community would gather to join the family.
Oh, yeah, it'd be all there. Supporting and to bring food and stuff like that, you know.
So it's very much a community, very much locked into itself.
Yeah, and they were all locked into it, and they're all mostly self-sufficient.
Yeah,
they weren't relying much on shops or anything like that because they had no money to go to the shop. I mean, that time, well, if anybody was getting a pound a week, they were getting a lot, pound or a couple of pound. I often heard them saying.
But there was probably always great interest in what was going on in the outside world and the big world, was there?
Well, of course, the radios didn't come in either till in the 40s. And there was only a radio in a very, very odd place. And you had to go in a Scarty in the halls, then you bring in the wet battery to get it charged. And there was a dry battery then as well that had go. And that would be only maybe for a match or anything like that, that you go to a house and... You'd have to hold your tongue.
Everyone to gather for it.
Everyone to gather and to be shh, shh, shh the whole time, you know. Then to be a crackling going on in the radio as well, you know.
And everyone would know the voice usually that I associate with that, those matches, Micheál O'Hare.
Micheál O'Hare, yeah, that's right. And I don't know who was doing it in my time either, you know. Might be probably Micheál O'Hare. But all the matches, and any matches that would be broadcast in of a Sunday, everyone would gather around then for the match. You see, especially if Wexford was playing.
But there was local hurling of football as well. Did you ever
hurling nearly? No, I never hurled. Well, I used to hurl and go to school and all like that, you know, but never good enough to make the team. So I wasn't.
But did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. So we did. But then there was hurling in every field that time. So there was many rounds over there. There was 15 or 16 of the rounds in the hall together, like ourselves. So there was a whole team on its own. You see. And you could go into any field then and hurl.
The area has a fair reputation for hurling, producing hurling heroes, doesn't it?
It would, yeah, yeah.
So hurling was quite strong.
Very strong altogether, you know. Do you see?
And then people would follow the local team, would they?
Yeah, so Big Jim, like, he'd be a relation of the 1910 team. Big Jim Wigan was on the 1910 team. He'd be one of us, you know, relations. And then they didn't do an awful lot of hurling because all the young people start going away. They all started emigrating.
Like you had to do for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And like... I come back that my mother was there and that she wanted me to come home, you see. to manage the farm the best I can. And we walked away then together and done bits and pieces. I used to draw milk to the creamery.
But when you came back then, did you notice that, like, a lot of the young people you had grown up with were no longer in the village?
They were all gone. They were nearly all gone, do you know. They seemed to be, because they were all left, they were gone to England when I come back. And even a lot of them were gone and I gone in the 50s. In 59 I went.
So for a young man, did that make the village a bit lonely?
Well, it got quieter and quieter, but sure, it ended up there wasn't only a handful here in the Lower Street. There was only a few old people in it. So it was quite enough, like, you know. At that time, you used to go out and go to, and you were playing pitching toss that time. Then, you know, the penny at the motto, and you're playing the same as horseshoes and throwing up the penny, and you'd be betting the penny on that for heads of harps, you know. But that's the way you amused yourself.
But how do you feel about the fact, Jim, that you were born into this village that no longer really exists
today?
You grew up in it and you've seen it vanish around you. The houses all disappear.
But that's the same everywhere. And well, there's no neighbourly thing now. There's no communication. Like, there's people living around and I don't know them, and they wouldn't want to know you. They know they'd pass by there, or think, if I was there, I'd say hello, and they might speak and they might not speak. You know, that's the way the society has gone today. You don't know your next door neighbour, and that's the truth of it.
The complete opposite of what you grew up with.
The complete opposite. There's no one to come in or anything either, you know. There's no one goes to anybody's house now because the television is on, or they have the house done up and maybe your feet be dirty or something like that. You wouldn't want to go in there, you know.
But does that help explain, maybe, Jim, the revival of the storytelling houses? That these are what people would have been like in a village, where people would have gathered into a cottage and tell stories
and get over a fireplace and things like that, and to tell our stories, yardens, you name it. There's one out of yarden anyway. I know.
Are you going to tell me one?
With this fella, and the thrashing was coming up, and he had a ham in the pot, you see, that night, boiling for the dinner the next day. And here, what did they think the lads done? Didn't they take the ham out of the pot and put in a pair of wellets in it? And what were the word in the prodding at the wellets? It's not done yet. You know?
I'd say that was the taste of the rubbery,
all right. Oh, that was rubbery then, all right, you know. another thing that used to happen to places, you slip up the back, you see, there was always in thatched houses, there was a ladder left along the back wall, underneath it, and they take down the ladder and they put up on the roof and they bring up in a wet sack and put it across the top of the chimney
and smoke the people out.
And there'd be smoke, because there'd know enough was after happening. And you'd get away, of course, in time.
You wouldn't have done that now, would you?
Oh, I'd never do anything like that. You know.
I suppose you had to think of ways to amuse yourself.
Well, if you amuse yourself, you have a bit of a laugh over things, you know.
Yeah. But the storytelling houses, I mean, it's not just old people gathering here. Yeah. Young people are discovering how good these are too, aren't they?
They are, yeah, but there wouldn't be a lot of, now we'd have it here, there wouldn't be much young people. Because you know, they're all for the buzz. They don't start coming to, like, those places till they're middle age, and then they get into it that way. They say, but other than that they don't bother up to that age. Doesn't matter what storytelling house that you go to, you look around, they're nearly all elderly people, all middle age and upwards in it. It's surprising what stories and that's sing a song and things like that, you know.
And nobody ever gets tired of hearing the same story?
Well, they'll always get a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
Get a laugh out of it, you know.
And there's quite a few storytelling houses now in the county.
Well, this is the best county, I think, in Ireland for storytelling at the present time, the way after taking off. Sure, I don't know many storytelling houses around. There's Ballymurn, Islegate. There's Bob's House.
Crossabeg,
and then there's one up in the Bracken, sure, our Bracken, then the Bull of Oak. And there's, God, there's several of them around now. There's that many, they're springing up, you know. And the one crowd is nearly going home all, you know. Well, not the one crowd, but they're all keeping going at, you know. And they're getting more people interested in going too, you see.
And what about the tourists? Are they finding it very good,
so they are. But I'd say there's going to be more people come to it because they can pass a few hours away and it's a cheap night.
So it's good for the recession.
And it's good for the recession, you know. But one lad lowers you again on the swing, again on the roundabout.
At the same time, Jim, can I ask you a little bit about this cottage? Because there's no preservation order on this, is there?
No, there's not, no.
So it could be knocked down tomorrow if somebody wanted it, if you wanted
it. Well, I mean, if it wanted to do, there's no preservation order on it, you know.
Any grants available to help it?
And there's no grants whatsoever. We're after John Dempsey generally does all that, and he after writing the word there, and he got no reply. No reply at all.
But, Jim, I'm conscious as I'm sitting here beside this log fire here and the smoke going up the chimney, and you can actually see the daylight coming down from the chimney.
Yeah. It won't be long till the jackdaws have it all blocked.
Building their nest. But that I'm sitting in Irish history here. These cottages are vanishing.
They're vanishing, but you can see it. All them cottages now around there, them are all... Look, all them are all gone.
So these are photographs you have here on the wall of the cottages
that was
used
around...
to be here.
Well, around the parish.
Yeah.
Around the parish.
And they're all gone.
And they're all gone. Level out. Because you can't get thatch, or you can't get a thatcher now.
Why is that?
Well, there's no one doing it, and I'm surprised that Foss has not... giving people the skills to do that, and they know that you have lads then that do be attaching. You see,
yeah. I mean, I've even heard of some people having to get thatchers over from England to do it.
England, yeah, and well, I think they had thatchers up around the west of Ireland there to even come to do it, you know. But there's no thatchers around here that much, you know.
So no local thatchers to do
there's
it.
No, the only one that does it is Jim Dunn. You know Jim, do you? No, he does a bit. He have the garden centre there in Moneyvaux, you know. And the gym does to be attaching on it, and that's voluntary, you see.
And how much would it cost to replace the attached roof on a cottage like this, do you think?
Well, I mean, you'd be talking around 4,000 or 5,000 anyway. And for the do it with reeds, it'll cost around 15,000 for the do this with reeds.
Oh, rather than straw.
Rather than straw, you know.
Reeds are the proper thing to use, are they?
Well, straw is the proper thing to use. The good oaten straw. And it's very hard to get the good oaten straw there now, you know. That's done with the binder. They say, and I want to be ripe, you know. I want to be at the right stage. I want to be cut with the binder, a bit rare. And then I want to be properly thrashed too, because if they don't thrash it properly, it's very hard to put it on the roof, because there'll be too much grain left there, and then the mice and rats gets up in it.
Of course.
And then it'll all start growing.
And why is the reed so much more expensive than the straw?
Well, it's to put on, you see, they have to put on reeds maybe a foot thick.
And
they can't get reeds. I think the proper reeds have to come in from Fern. Although that they were got off the slob, them ones. But them will get very brittle. The reeds get very brittle.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the fact that in this cottage you can actually see the roof itself.
You can see it, yeah.
Right through there, that's what's on the outside there that we're looking at.
Yeah, that's what's on. Well, a straw is on the outside.
And the reed.
We put the reeds on the inside to keep the straw from coming falling through, you see. Other than that, you'd have to seal it.
Oh, yeah.
You see that you'd have to seal the whole thing, because the straw, you see, with mites and everything else in it, it'd be all coming down in dust and the straw be all chopped then. So it would.
But at the same time, there's no grants available. It's up to you to dip into your own pocket.
You're keeping hope for the good of the community, you're not benefiting. You wouldn't be benefiting one thing by it.
Yeah. But as I said, I mean, it's a cheap night for people coming to the House of Stories.
It is, yeah.
There's no set fee to come in, is there?
No, there's no set fee. Well, we have no set fee, but some of the storytellers have, well, they sell tickets at the door.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the coverage. Maybe you buy 5 years worth of tickets, they say, and they have it all. But we don't do that, because you'd always have to be looking for prizes and things like that. And that way there's a donation box and put what's liking it.
I see the donation box, yeah.
And that's, and we give them one drink. They can either have a drop of whiskey or they can have stout or they can have a mineral first. And then the storytelling starts, then the Shanachie.
But of course, you can't, you can't sell the drink, or
You can't sell it.
You become a Shivin, but you're...
Yeah, you can't sell it. No, we don't sell it, they say.
So people get their little drop, and they have little their tea drop, and sandwiches and cakes.
Get their tea and brown bread and scones.
Lovely.
And jam, blackcurrant jam or raspberry jam or whatever beyond the brown bread.
And then all they have to do is make whatever donation they think they want.
And they go up there and they get their mug of tea.
Nice.
I'm sure you that you want to, we'll have a little soap. Would you have a little soap?
We're not allowed, we're driving, aren't we?
Oh, you're driving now.
But you can show me the bottle afterwards. Obviously though, this area, this village that used to be, and this house are very important to you, Jim.
Well, I'll tell you what, if this went over, it'd be as bad as losing a good neighbour or friend. I mean, it'd be just I feel very lonely if they're gone. Because here all my life, strange about it.
And what would you like to see happen to this place in the future, though? I mean, would you like to see it still here 100 years' time?
Oh, I would, yeah. I would like to see it there if it can be kept there. If the storytelling, keep it on, you know.
But shouldn't there be some sort of support and help for...
There should be. There should be for to keep the like of that there, because it's a tradition now, you see, and it keeps the people then that come there, and there's always chatting, and it's lovely to meet a lot of strange people, and they all can chat and talk among themselves about various things, and you'd meet people, like, you know.
Also a great opportunity then to hear other stories, and because stories, it's not just jokes, there's singing, there's performing, there's music.
There's no foul language used in it now. You know?
Yeah. And anyone can get up and say,
like, we generally have a stick, and that stick is passed around, and you can either sing or that, you can sing or however you like, or tell a story, whichever case may be.
Mind you, at the same time, Jim, have you ever said, groaned to yourself and said, oh no, not him or her, they better not start singing?
No, you never mind. No one minds anybody what they can sing in their own air, and that's it.
So are there any real rules about it then?
There's no rules about it.
Just no bad language? And
no bad language or foul stories. You know, it has to be kept clean. Clean, you know. There's been no lies told either.
Yeah, have you another? Do you get up and?
No, I don't. I get ready the house for him, and that's my end of it.
You just sit and enjoy it.
I sit and enjoy it, and let them tell the stories. You know.
So you don't tell the stories. You don't sing. You don't dance.
No. Oh, I let them do all that. No, I don't bother. I don't bother. To like this fella now. There's just two fellas went over to England. Well, they did last summer was, and what happened was there was an awful rough night, a rough day, so it was, and they went on the catamaran. We got, anyway, one lad, then he got it was real rough, and when they lying down snoring asleep, and the other fellow was up walking around, and he seen when he gave him a kick, and he didn't know what to do. I'd say to him, I says to him, see, like that, the boat is sinking, he says, get up, see, it's not mine. You know,
maybe you should be standing up telling
them.
No,
I wouldn't tell them at all. Let somebody else tell them. I know, you know.
By the way, just before we do finish up, Jim, I'm wondering about the history of the original Owlert village. Is that written up somewhere, or is it?
I don't think there's anything written then about, because I never can find out anything about it. That wall along there in front, I don't know when that was built. I know around Paddy Sutton's, I remember that. Barely can remember that being either built or things with a couple of carpenters, you know, builders. There was an old Mog Byrne used to work with Canon Marr, I often heard him saying, and Mog always had smart answers. So we got, anyway, Canon Marr was real fussy, and he was building the piggeries for Canon Marr, anyway. and Canon Mara come out, and he says to him, see like that, I'm gone fed up with this carrying on too long, they say. And Canon says, Moses, it's not for what you done that. You know.
Yeah. Because you mentioned earlier about, and I remember I was asking you how you knew there were 83 people. Yeah. Because that was part of the survey, wasn't it?
After the survey, and we're going to school to count how many people was in the village or in your area.
So that might have been a census at the time.
It wasn't a census, it was just maybe it's a census in the school. It wasn't a census either. They know it's just how many people lived around. Maybe they wanted to know how many people were in it and how many people had gone out. Sure, it ended up, I'd say, when there's not many people now living around here. Only, say, Luke and myself that was born and reared here.
And would there be any map showing what the original village was like?
Well, there would be a map, I'd say. Well, although I have no map of it, it'd be the old map in 1922 map. Mm. That'd be the only map that'd be there. They say all the little houses and all would be all marked on that. So there's 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's a dozen houses or more gone over completely. Where there were fields, where they lived in corners, fields and things like that, you know.
Maybe you'll have to write the history of it.
Oh, you have it there now.
And thankfully we do now, don't we? We know where
at least
the village is.
Know that, you know. And sure, there's a well in our in the field over there, and there was a kind of a dam built. And the water then was able to flow across the field, and there was a spout, or there was a well then, and they used to go down with the assen jars, and ponies got nearly always an assen jar and a barrel, and they were drawing the water out of that. And bring it up out the alley there, as we used to call it. And then the fairs, then they used to bring the horses and the cattle then and have them all down there at the back of the wall.
So that was the central water supply for the whole village?
That was the central water supply there for the whole village.
I know that you talked about Cervantes here. Does this mean there's water in this house now?
No, there's no water.
You're still bringing it in next door?
Oh, we're bringing it in next door.
So this house has no water?
There's no water.
No toilets?
No toilets, nor no electricity.
So it's as original as it gets?
As original as it gets. We would even the old wall lamp there.
I see that.
You know? Yeah. And the candle down. That's only just that. We had the tilly lamps working, but there were two dangers.
With the roof.
With the roof. So how we done, we put a bulb in the tilly lamp.
I see that.
And brought in, and that's the way we worked it then, you know.
Right, so you're supplying the electricity and the water and everything for this place?
Supplying the water and whatever they say. Ah, we don't mind. Once you're able to keep it going, like, you know, now storytelling now tonight now, and we have it nearly ready for it, you know. They say, well, just want to bring this up of water now, and I want to put a light then on the pole. We generally had to put up a ladder then and put a big light on the pole, take it in then, because the wire would get all wet. And the plugs then, we'll put them in a plastic bag so they wouldn't be getting wet.
So there'll be a good session expected tonight, will there?
Well, this is Easter Monday night, so I wouldn't be thinking that much, you know. Could be anywhere up to 24 or 5, just the same.
But considering it's been a dull, wet Easter
Monday
people might be looking for something.
They might be wanting to go out, but then they'll be visiting and things like that too, so they won't raise that.
Jim, finally, can I just ask you, apart from a few years away in England that time, you came back to your roots and you've lived here there for the rest of your life.
The rest of my life.
And were you happy to do that?
I surely was delighted. I had to come back. I didn't like England that well. You know, it wasn't hard to bring me back. But then I wouldn't have come back unless on account of, well, my mother wasn't very well, and she wanted to come back to do the things, so there's nothing else I could do, and I work away on the farm and do other things then as well, you know. So then I got a job. I was lucky, very lucky, all right. And after a couple of years, I got a job drawing milk to the creamery, going around to the farmers and collecting the cans. Remember the cans on the side of the road?
I do indeed.
And I had a tractor and trailer on the road, and I used to go from here, then I go down to Ballochiel, over to Ballinamone, and back through the Ballach, and out to Ballamohi, and down to Kilmuckridge then. And that was only a matter of a half day, and I had got good money out of that, you know, fairly good money in the summer time yet, but in the winter time you wouldn't be getting anything worthwhile out of it, you know.
Actually, it's an interesting feeling as we're sitting here in the cottage. I'm hearing a cockerel crowing in the background. It's like being transported back in time,
well,
isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have the cocks. We keep a couple of ducks and keep the cock and a few hens. We generally have our local eggs.
So you still have your local produce?
Oh, God, we have it. I have the garden sold out there. I always saw a few bananas and bay cabbage and a few vegetables and all like that, you know. Well, they keep it clean out there, you know. But we don't sow any. It's not like long ago I used to sow an acre of potatoes that time, and turnips and things like that, you know. We don't bother with anything like that, because you only do a lot of tillage. Now, a son of mine, there was a guy I took there in retirement, and I made the place over to him.
Oh, very good.
So I did, and that's, I'm not sorry either. So, yeah.
Yeah, because it was hard work farming.
Well, a 7-day week, and you had to be there at all times, you know. You had no set hours anyway, you know, just, although you'd rather have it somewhere or another, you're born and reared into it, and that was it, you know. So it's always walk away then together. He does, could be a tillage.
Good land around here?
Would be good land, yes. Well, it's good and dry, all back upwards. We live there now, they had land there, it's just up around the forestry there, coming down from the forestry down, across the Inniscarty Road. It takes a good bit of land out then as well, Sir Patrick, though, you know. He's all his own equipment, things like that.
Very good. Well, Jim, you've got a lot of work to do still to get this place. Do you have a name on the cottage, by the way? Is there?
No, it's just attached cottage. It's just attached to our storytelling house.
Storytelling house.
There's no name on it. As such, yeah, anyway.
Well, I hope it's still here long after
time. I hope so, anyway. Sure, if not, it won't be our fault that it's gone
that's
out.
For sure. Sure.
We'll keep it up as long as we're in it. There were a lot of the old things now that they used to be in it. The little old butter scales long ago, the dumps.
Wait.
Things like that.
I see the old radio up on top. And
radio
there.
And the bees.
Is that an old beehive, is it? It's
a beehive, yeah.
Very good.
There's some people that live in things, but then I told them we didn't want the big lot of things to be left in. Because it gets broken into.
Yes, of course. There's always that danger. So those are the weights of the skin. Ah, look at that.
Look at that. And them had to be checked every so often by the weights and measure.
Right, so they had to be exact.
Had to be exact.
For measuring out the pound of butter.
The pound of butter or the half pound or ounce or whatever.
Very good. Terrific.
Used to be on them anyway, but that's the half pound 8 ounces.
Ah, that's what it is. So that's what half pound of butter would feel like.
Yeah.
8 ounces, yes, so it is. That's marvellous.
Well, I'm sure it's better to keep it anyway, you know. There's not many of them around now, either.
No, Jim, there's not.
You might go to Johnstown Castle or someplace for the sea water, you know.